News Talk Breakfast, in association with AIR, supporting your business on our mobile network right across Ireland.
It is now 6:31, just coming up to 6:32. I'm Donal O'Donovan. Coming up between now and 7 o'clock, I'll be hearing how one Irish university is breaking the trend by moving up global rankings. Brian Herron of Irish technology design agency Each and Other will be here to talk about employee ownership. And Ryan McGrath of Cantor Fitzgerald will be here with the latest from the markets. First off, quick look at this morning's papers. IBEC calls for business subsidies for Brexit is the off-lead on page one in the Irish Examiner, and that story is carried across all of the main papers today. Employers group IBEC claims that up to €500 million per year in state and EU supports are needed, to help business trade through the disruptions caused by Brexit. IBEC reckons supports equal to about 5% of the value of current exports by the indigenous sector in Ireland is needed, basically as subsidies to ride out the shock. Elsewhere, the Irish Independent reports a 65% plunge in the value of Irish mergers and acquisitions M&A deals in the year to date, as compared to the same time last year. The massive drop was driven by the gate closing essentially on so-called tax inversion deals from the US. There had been a swathe of US corporations relocating here, or relocating their sort of official tax headquarters here, by buying smaller Irish rivals that stopped at the end of the Obama administration. And I suspect no US corporation wants to put its head above the parapet with Donald Trump in the White House and see how far they can push the law on that. Irish law firm A&L Goodbody advised on 11 deals and is the busiest advisor in the year so far in the sector. And finally, Donald Trump again has reported an €11 million of income from his Doombeg Golf Resort in County Clare. Simon Carswell reports in the Irish Times that the US president values the resort at between $5 million and $25 million in his latest filings with US ethics authorities. Right, that is the papers so far this morning, and now I am joined by Tony Brabazon, who's the Associate Dean and Director at the Smurfit Graduate Business School at UCD. Good morning, Tony. So this morning, your full-time MSc in finance, that programme has been ranked 36th in the world and 31st in Europe in the Financial Times Top 60. Congratulations, I suppose, but other than the glory of the parish, as it were, what's the benefit of that kind of ranking?
Very good question. We're certainly not in the rankings game for glory. Predominantly, rankings are important to our students. We have about 60 students on the MSc Finance every year, and they go on to careers not just in Dublin, but in global leading financial centres. So it's important to them to have a strong programme behind them when they're looking for jobs in the leading firms. I think the other aspect of the rankings is that they're important from an Irish financial services sector point of view as well, because if you look at every leading financial services destination city, they're supported by strong business schools. So if we want to be in the market to capture leading firms and benefit, for example, from Brexit at the moment, we have to have a supply of well-trained graduates looking for employment.
And for those employers, I suppose, to know who they are.
Oh, absolutely. What you would frequently find at the moment, of course, is a lot of concern over Brexit in the UK. And obviously, from a Dublin point of view, we're looking to pick up some of the business that might be transitioning out of London. And what you'll typically find is if firms don't currently have a presence here, when they come in and talk to the IDA, as part of their visit, they will also come and talk to universities to see what the flow of potential graduates for them is.
So that's active. That's something that's happening.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We've seen a big uptick now in the last about 12 months in terms of requests from the IDA to accompany them when on meetings with firms looking at coming in.
One of the big, obviously, things that happened after the crash is that there was a sort of a general cutback on spending, and that hit education quite hard, third levels quite hard. And Irish universities have been moving down global rankings. You're moving the other direction. How is that being achieved, and why is it different?
I think it's been a number of combinations. Interestingly, I certainly would have been very concerned back in 2008, 2009, 2010 in terms of what the employment prospects for our graduates would be. But we actually never saw a downtick in terms of employment for our graduates, and salaries held up. Looking back on it, what I think happened was there was a flight to quality, in that certainly there were fewer jobs available in the Irish market, but firms then became more choosy so that they went to the leading schools when they were looking for for their potential recruits. So our salary levels of our graduates actually held up. So I suppose from a student point of view, there could be, as you said, the honour and glory in doing a degree in a well-ranked institution. But to be blunt, most students can be pretty good at doing the financial calculations. And yes, they can look at what cost of doing a degree are, but then they can look and see what the outcome in terms of salary progression is from that. And that's a very important part of all of our programmes, not just the initial salary that somebody starts on, but also what is their salary progression over 3 to 5 years. So we can see, for example, in the ranking here that the students have increased their salaries by close to 50% over their first 3 years of employment, which is a pretty good return on investment.
Yeah. And in terms of where the business school at the Smurfit Business School sits in the Irish kind of educational landscape, the universities generally have been declining in terms of rankings. So why are you different?
I think the main reason that we're different is that we don't depend at postgraduate level on exchequer funding. So effectively, our numbers have held up and our tuition fees have been increasing over the last number of years. So our revenue stream has been strong.
So you've been sort of less hit by austerity.
Absolutely, absolutely. And of course, all of that revenue goes back into services for the students. So it goes into recruit more faculty to provide better services, facilities for students.
So the kind of the business school itself is essentially self-funded then, is it?
Absolutely, completely self-funded, yes.
And in terms of kind of the model then, I mean, you must look around the other educational institutions and see, I suppose, where the squeeze is in terms of funding. Is the model broken in terms of Irish education?
It certainly has been very tough, and the various university presidents have talked on this issue and this issue at length. Obviously, the government has been in difficult financial circumstances. It's had to make the taxation revenue spread further. Education hasn't always been the priority, because return on education is a long term thing. I think what you see most affecting the Irish education system is at undergraduate level, where you have large enrolments, large classes, and HEA funding coming back quite substantially over recent years. And, you know, in some disciplines, for example, engineering and science, you have a need for capital expenditure. And if that's not done on an ongoing basis, you know, you very quickly start to run down your infrastructure.
And fees apparently still politically toxic.
Well, at undergraduate level, obviously people pay a registration fee, which is around the 3,500 mark. At postgraduate level, then it's market rates. So our fees would run somewhere, depends on the programme you're doing, but for an Irish student, somewhere around 16,000 and up to 21,000 for an international student. But of course, we benchmark those very carefully against our leading European competitors. So we would be pretty much mid-pack in terms of fees. So we certainly feel that we give good value for money for students.
And what's the profile in terms of the intake of students? Who comes in?
It's quite diverse. In our MSc finance class, we have approximately 60 students. About 20 of those are Irish. 40 are coming in from 14 other countries. They include China, India, United States, France, Germany. One of the advantages, of course, of having a ranked programme is that it is attractive to students, not just domestic students, but also international students. And that creates a very interesting learning environment for all students in the programme. About 40% of the class are female. So it's quite a diverse group.
And age-wise, are they sort of 21, 31?
Age-wise, most students would be what we would term pre-experienced. So they would be within 1 or 2 years of their completion of their undergraduate degree. So about 21, 22 typically, yes.
Tony Brabazon, Associate Dean at the Smurfit Graduate School of Business, UCD. Thanks for coming in. It is 6:44. Welcome back. Now, most people in Ireland who work are either employees or they're self-employed. And we hear lots about share options and so on, but most of us are either one or the other. The Irish Pro Share Association, IPSA, wants to change that. And I'm joined now by Brian Herron, who's the Principal Designer and Director at Irish Design Agency Each and Other, and a member of the Irish Pro Share Association. Good morning, Brian.
Morning.
Thanks for coming in. Each and Other, I said it's a design agency, a technology design agency in Ireland. So tell me a bit about the business, I suppose, first of all, and then, you know, why the ProShare Association is relevant to that.
So I'm going to try and give you the short version. This conversation can usually take a while. Our organization solves customer experience problems for businesses, and we do that through design. So what we do is we try and get businesses as close as we possibly can to their users, find out what their customers are really going to value, and then we try and come up with design solutions that will make their customers' lives better. So we can help businesses to sell more, to deliver better services, get more loyal customers. And so we believe that better design means better business. And usually better means faster, more efficient, and usually faster, more efficient means digital. So we primarily are a digital agency. We do websites, we do apps, chatbots, any sort of digital trickery you can think of. But we're not just digital. So we try and look at what the customer is going to value and then build a solution around that. So it could be online, offline. It doesn't really matter.
So you're at the sort of the kind of the intersection of creativity and technology.
That might have been a shorter way to say it, yeah.
And that's kind of classic agency work. And I suppose in New York or in London, agencies, a lot of them are sort of they're owner managed, and presumably that's why that's a relevant model for you.
Yeah, I mean the agency model is we definitely are started off as in that way, and often agencies are personality driven. A lot of the time there is one or two single people who started the studio and pushed it forward, and that was the case with us originally, but as time has gone on, the leadership within the team has broadened out, and now that single sort of individual pushing the company forward doesn't make as much sense for us. So we've changed how we operate and how we work.
And you've looked at employee share ownership.
Yeah, so we have a fairly broad ownership base at the moment. We are a limited company. We're 35 people, and about a third of the company or so holds some form of direct ownership. We had a management buyout of a previous company around 2014. The team has been together since 2002. And since that, when we were going through that process of changing the management structure, we looked at loads of different options about what we could do, and we settled on an employee ownership structure. Now, we haven't fully fulfilled our ambitions in that area yet, but we're on the path to. We've encountered some difficulties along the way, which is why we've linked up with the IPSA.
And in terms of benefits, so what's the benefit for you of doing it, of that model of kind of broader ownership?
Yeah. As designers, I think there's a temptation in business to think that this is an airy-fairy solution and it's from the goodness of our hearts or something that we want to share. And there is an element of that. You know, we do want to, as a business, do the right thing for the team that we're working with. We want to share success. We want to share some of the failures and some of the difficulties as well. And we genuinely want to go through this together. The company is called Each and Other. I mean, it's part of the brand. We view our team and our clients as very interlinked. So it makes sense for us, right? But there are really, like, tangible, practical reasons to do this. First of all, to facilitate a management buyout requires capital, and we aren't particularly rich. So a few people together, or many people together, can actually generate an enormous amount of capital. So there's a practical reason to do it, and that's got a lot of benefits for SMBs in the long term. But if you look at the UK, employee-owned businesses or businesses with broad employee ownership structures tend to have higher productivity, they tend to be more innovative, and critically, they're more profitable. So that's just a better company overall.
That's the sort of classic skin in the game type of an argument.
Classic skin in the game, yeah. They also tend to be better at planning over the long term. So it's not just one person planning to cash out in 10 years. There's a bunch of people who are ongoingly coming into the company and thinking further ahead all the time. And you've got a workforce that's really engaged with what they're doing. So that, like, they are the sort of the benefits that you see in the UK and elsewhere with these structures. And we've definitely seen those things in our company. But there are other things that we've observed that are really powerful as well. So we're a professional services firm. There's an enormous amount of competition for the type of person that we hire. And we have amazing retention at the moment. So I think over the last year, we've only lost two people, and only then in the last six months. So that's an incredible sort of feeling that we can offer stability to our clients. So that's very powerful.
In terms of the pro arguments, then I guess you can go a long time. The barriers in Ireland then?
Yeah, there's quite a few. So when we were starting off, we couldn't find any examples of what we wanted to do in Ireland, particularly for SMBs. So that was quite daunting when we couldn't point to something that we wanted to be like. When we approached our solicitor and came with our list of requirements, he called our shareholders' agreement adventurous and exotic, which is a worrying thing to come out of the lips of a solicitor.
No, that doesn't sound sort of positive from a solicitor.
No, but thankfully he's very good, so we got through it. But there's nothing off the shelf that we could look at and pick up, and that means that to get things right, you know, it's expensive and it's time-consuming, and there's better things to be working on as a business. And finally, in the broader, we want to be able to allow this facilitation for ownership to go out through our entire company. And there's just nothing off the shelf that we can pick in Ireland from a tax point of view and a legislative point of view that we can put our hands on. Everything that's out there seems to be designed for big organizations and not for companies like ours.
In terms of what you're doing, in terms of the ProShare Association, there's a sort of big day coming up on Thursday.
Yeah, so this is something they've been working on for a while. It's a day on the Google campus, so they partnered with Google and Global Equity Organization on the project. They've got a whole host of workshops, legal workshop, tax workshops with Deloitte, the tax one is, so I'm sure they're not going to be as dry as that sounds. And they have a speaker, Campbell MacDonald, from an organization called Baxendale, which actually started off, I think, as a heavy goods industry and now is a consultancy that helps companies to move to... share ownership. So that's on Thursday. I think it's €75 for non-IPSA members.
And I guess anyone wants to get involved, get in touch with the Irish ProShare Association. Brian Heron, thanks for coming in. It is just coming up, or it is now, 5 to 7. This is Newstalk Breakfast Business, and Ryan McGrath of Cantor Fitzgerald joins me for the latest, with the latest even from the markets. Good morning, Ryan.
Morning, Don.
Politics very much driving the agenda in terms of world markets. You've got the French elections today, French election results essentially, and the Brexit talks.
Yes, I think there was probably, from the market's point of view, there's a positive result out of the French, the legislative elections, the second round, which Macron and his fledgling Orient party got a solid majority over the weekend. I mean, this was a guy who they said, first of all, he couldn't be president. Then they said when he won the presidency, he couldn't govern because he didn't have a party. And now he's got an overall majority in the parliament. So he's very pro-business. So he will look to push through in his campaign. He has a series of contentious labour market reforms, which he will look to push through in the second half.
And he's got a mandate. I mean, he's got an overwhelming mandate, really, to do whatever he wants, doesn't he?
Yes. I think the interesting thing here is, I mean, because it his party is so new, a lot of the candidates will run as first timers, and they will know that they really got in on the back of him. So it's quite different to the situation that you have in the US with Trump and the Republican Party. These guys won't really be able to take on Macron and will actually vote for him on all his issues because they are so new to the parliament.
And so what's the impact of that then in terms of the markets?
I think the markets will like it. I think it will be risk on. I think Macron is pro-growth. He's pro-business. He's pro-European. It'll lead nicely into the first round of Brexit negotiations, which I don't think the markets are expecting a huge amount of. I think they're just waiting. They will wait and see, and they'll probably be more focused on tone than anything else. But I think for Brexit, I think Macron will certainly be a worthy adversary for Theresa May because, I mean, he's very pro-European.
The Bank of England and the Fed last week both met, that kind of have set their course now for the summer. What is the course?
I think we got what we expected pretty much from both banks. The devil was in the detail. The Fed increased interest rates by 25 basis points. I think they will leave it at that for the remainder of the summer, and we'll take a look probably in the autumn. I think the market's still pricing in one more hike. The Bank of England was unchanged, but interestingly, the vote the vote was 5-3 in favour of keeping interest rates on hold, which it was 7-1 the last time. So there was three of the board members voted to increase interest rates. This is obviously because inflation is running at 2.9% in the UK. So the increase in interest rates may come there to stabilise the inflation. But I think Mark Carney can find himself in a very difficult situation with decreased growth and increased inflation. So which will be quite a difficult problem for him if stagflation sets in the UK.
Ryan McGrath of Cantor Fitzgerald, thanks for coming in. It is now 6:58. You're listening to Newstalk Breakfast Business.
Newstalk Breakfast, in association with AIR, supporting your business on our mobile network right across Ireland.